We present The Sound of Football.
Just for once, we're all in the same room together. Who'd have thought it would ever happen? Gents, welcome.
Well, hello, my house. welcome to my house.
Should I go out and come back in again? I'll tell you what, all back to my place.
And let's not forget that Steve Gerrard has also had his problems off the field as well.
No stranger to controversy.
No stranger to controversy himself.
Appalling tasting music and a fervent desire to inflict his appalling tasting music on other people. I mean, if we have two winners...
Yeah,
then we've got.
I'm just saying, if we lose John Terry, then we just get Russell Brand in and have done with it. I mean, he's got a similar record. Thanks, Graham, for allowing us all to join you in your humble abode.
Yeah, welcome, Graham. I mean, sorry,
now get out of my house. Oh, it's your house. Yeah.
Well, hello, and welcome to another scintillating edition of The Sound of Football. Chris Oakley here, and once again, I'm very pleased to say that I have Graham Sibley and Terry DeFellin with me to share the memories and to generally chit-chat about football the way you like us to. Welcome, gents.
Hello.
Hello.
So, really, it's we've got another excuse to go a bit off-topic, a bit like last week, really. Instead of, I'm sure we were... There's time and we have the inclination. We will mention Premier League and whatever, but I think really and truly the main news of the weekend comes from the Euro 2012 draw, which took place in Warsaw yesterday as we speak. We're recording this on Monday night, so that was Sunday, and much to be discussed where that's concerned. We'll start off, I think, by looking at the plight, so to speak, of the British nations and the home nations generally and all that kind of stuff. So let's begin with England because we can. England, I'll come to you first, Terry, seeing as you have written a splendid article for some people on the pitch, just kind of going over the draw. England have got one of the shorter groups with only five teams in it. Basically, what do you make of it? I mean, it looks like it's a group which is winnable. Would you agree?
Absolutely, yes. It is a very winnable group. Switzerland are all right. They're pretty good. They qualified for the World Cup, and they have some useful players, some quite good players. I would immediately look to their goalkeeper, who plays for Wolfsburg, and another Wolfsburg player, Tranquilla Barnetta, attacking midfielder, very good player. They're a useful side.
Senderos and all that.
And they've got indeed, maybe less so Senderos, but that's perhaps sort of indicates the level that they're at, that a guy like Senderos is playing for them. But they've got a very good coach, Otmar Hitzfeld, who I assume will still be the manager then. And so they'll be the toughest challenge. Bulgaria, we don't know too much about these days. This is because they don't do much. Wales... Well, I mean, I've seen a few Wales a bit. They're young, and they've got an experienced coach. But I would still think that England should be wary of them because it's a derby game. But we should have the quality to do that. And while Montenegro are a former Yugoslavian side, they are a very small nation indeed, and very, very young in terms of football. And while they'll be difficult, and none of the teams there should be disrespected or underestimated, but England really should win the group. Perhaps not comfortably, but they should certainly win the group. I don't know what you think, Graham.
No, certainly. I think you've certainly got to look at the fact that you know, to drop points against any of those side at home would be embarrassing, I think. And we'd be looking to pick up quite a few points on our travels as well. I think you're right. Bulgaria, you know, they haven't been the same side that got to the semi-finals in 1994. That was their high point, and they've been on the slide ever since. Wales, of course, you know, they will raise their game immeasurably when they play us. But
most teams do.
Most teams do. You just got to look at the lineups that they're going to put against each other, and whereas you've got any number of stars in the England team, you're only going to have four or five Premier League names in the Wales team.
Hmm. Well, I mean, sorry, go on, Graham.
Sorry, no, and you know, as I'm just really echoing Terry really on there, Switzerland, good young team that have been together for a little while now and are improving. But yeah, you know, key is they're still improving. They're quite high up in the FIFA rankings though, aren't they? I think.
They are, yes.
Was it
12th or something like that? I think they're not 18 apparently.
Was it the under 17 World Cup that they won?
It was recently, yeah. And that was a tough call because that was over in Africa.
Yes. They weren't expected to win. Yeah, they've got the Swiss football is very interesting. It's going through a real transitory phase because the Swiss FA are letting loose their sort of national sort of propensity to xenophobia, and they're embracing the children of their immigrant population, who are Swiss by birth and Swiss by right. But they come in all shapes and sizes, and they're turning them into a much more multicultural team, that under 17 side. And I think that's definitely a team to look out for in the future. But I think for the next 2 years, I don't think they'll have enough to trouble a decent, well managed England side. And you'd have to say that England are decent and well managed.
Yeah, I mean, you've got names like Gökhan Inler and Hakan Yakin. I suppose they're sort of good examples of that.
Yeah, they're the trailblazers, really. Certainly Yakin is the trailblazer for that. But I understand there's more of that to come,
right?
Which is great for Swiss football. And I suspect in a broader way, it's great for Switzerland as well. But I think, yes, at the moment, perhaps, you know, from in a strictly footballing sense, we shouldn't be too worried about them.
No, indeed. Well, Switzerland were actually the team that Fabio Capello played first, or faced first, shall we say, when he took over in charge of England, which was a match that England won. And as you say, in terms of the other teams in the group, they're the only ones that have actually qualified for the World Cup this year. Definitely a team on the up, I think, possibly. I say hesitantly. You've got sort of Bulgaria, I think you sort of both pretty much suggested, a kind of a bit on the wane. And the sort of key result that raised a few eyebrows in their World Cup qualifications to finish was they lost 4-1 to Cyprus, which didn't exactly fill everyone with great sense of admiration. So I'm not saying that they lose all their matches quite as catastrophically as that, but that's certainly something to consider. Montenegro were in Ireland's group and managed to get a couple of 0-0 draws against Ireland, actually, which is no mean feat. But essentially, as you said, Terry, they've got a lot of young players, and I think they're still developing into the sort of force, if you like, that perhaps Serbia have already got to, and so on and so on. And then you've got Wales, who, what can we say? There are a lot of young players in that squad. Aaron Ramsey, of course, a player that you know a lot about, Graham, and people like that. But it's been a while since we played Wales. I think it's been a good few years. I don't think England have actually lost to Wales since about 1984, if I remember rightly. So you'd have to think, hopefully, as you say, particularly at home, Graham, maybe 3 points in that one, and maybe even three in Wales itself. So not the worst draw
by any means.
Yes, indeed. And we'll find out. I think it's in the next sort of month or so, the order of the fixtures and who's playing when and so on. One key thing, of course, that you have to bear in mind, compared to the World Cup qualification that England have just been through, is that the total amount of mileage England are going to notch up is going to be far less, because there's going to be far less travelling, because basically all the teams are that much closer. Which, is that likely to have much of an impact, you think? Or should you think players should be able to deal with that kind of thing easily?
I think, you know, when most of these players are playing Champions League every other week, then they're probably quite
used to doing a bit of travelling.
Yeah, but yes, you say that. I mean, like, you know, there's only like, you know, three trips to Europe, isn't there?
And a coach ride to Wales.
And
I mean, like in the World Cup qualifiers, there was trips to Belarus and Ukraine and Kazakhstan, so there won't be too much of that,
no,
I suspect. No. So that's all to England's advantage. One thing that you picked up on, Terry, in your article on some people on the pitch, with regards to Scotland's group, is that they've got a tricky one in the shape of Spain, current European champions. Also, they're the sort of seeded team in Scotland's group. They've also got Czech Republic. When I sort of saw them drawn out, I thought, oh dear, that's going to be a nasty one. And sure enough, they won't be easy to beat, Terry. But Czech Republic, very much a spent force these days. And how do you see the two games that Scotland have got against Czech Republic going?
Pivotal, absolutely pivotal. I don't think that anyone will. I think there's a good possibility that Spain could finish with a 100% record in Group I.
I think there's an extremely good possibility of that.
And then, so therefore, it's all down to second place. And I think the Czech Republic are definitely there for the taking. And if Craig Levein can fashion a tenacious and enterprising squad from his relatively limited array of players that he's got there, but they're not terrible, Scotland, by any stretch, and they came very close to 2008. They've been terrible, but again, it's down to the manager, I think, a lot of this. And they've got a definite chance. They can not slip up against Liechtenstein and Lithuania, which is a relatively moderately sized if. But if they can do that, then they've got an excellent chance of taking second. And they should, I think, they should plan their campaign along the lines of, we're going for second and we're going for a playoff. I mean, who knows? Maybe they may even sneak automatic qualification through being second, through having the best record. But you know, if they plan it out like that and plan their campaign accordingly, I think they've got an excellent chance of making it through, because the Czechs, I think, are definitely there for the taking.
Yes, and of course, and if they do, then those two games against the Czech Republic will be key, absolutely. Yeah. And as long as they don't slip up to Lithuania, I mean, Liechtenstein, I think. They should be able to beat Liechtenstein, but Lithuania is the sort of team that
Lithuania have
stepped up against in the past.
Lithuania are perfectly one of those teams that are perfectly capable of
Georgia,
of upsetting teams that aren't ready for them or aren't prepared for them.
Yeah,
so they will need to be prepared. But you know, I think this is as good a chance as they'll have. There are tougher groups,
and of course negotiations are now back on, we think, at least the media thinks anyway, with regards to Mr. Ferguson possibly getting back into the squad under the new management, and maybe he'll be back, Barry Ferguson, to retake his place possibly, and if he does, then that will all be to the good of Scotland as well,
without question. Yeah.
And ironically, in the forthcoming fixtures that are going on the 3rd of March, guess who Scotland are playing? Czech Republic. So there we go. We're getting an early chance to see how those two match up.
An early sighter, yeah.
Yeah. So there we go. So that's Scotland's group. And Northern Ireland have got a typically tough group. They don't seem to get much luck in Northern Ireland. So they've got Italy as the seeded team in their group, along with Serbia, of course, are going off to the World Cup as well. And they've also got Slovenia, another one, and Estonia and the Faroe Islands. So, blimey, that's going to be a tough call to get second place in that group. But Serbia and, Serbia and Slovenia, how many points they're going to be looking at, but, you know, they don't want to be slipping up too much against those two, I suspect.
I think the only thing that Northern Ireland can really look forward to is the fact that I think there's going to be a lot of points taken off each other in that group.
Mm.
That's a good point.
Consistency will be the key.
It could be. You know, I think, you know, if a team can do well at home in that group, then they'll do well. But it's, I mean, I can see Slovenia holding points at home to anyone in that group.
Yes.
And the same with Serbia. I can see them holding. And I think it's going to be key. I think if you say that the games against Estonia and Faroe Islands are the gimmies, then it's really difficult to call a lot of the other games there.
Mm. Actually, it's a good point. Actually, going back to something you mentioned in your article, Terry, about the fact that England were in a short group, because of course the way that, as you explained in your article, it's the nine group winners plus the best runner up, and then the other eight runners up go into a playoff, and so therefore, but the results for who qualifies as runners up. Or who gets seeded? I can't remember. It's only sort of it takes into account in the bigger groups, in the groups of six, you disregard the weakest team in the group.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's how it's worked in most qualifications recently. Mm.
Yes. Yeah. So by England being in a shorter group, I suppose there's a bit more sort of pressure to get results right the way through.
As well, in shorter groups, if you muck up, you've got less chance of getting of of setting things right again.
Exactly. That's exactly the point I was hand-fistedly trying to make. Thank you for being concise.
Just
on that.
Returning to Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland, I think, can be very pleased with their progress. They've gone from being pretty much utter rubbish and whipping boys, or borderline whipping boys of any qualification group, to being a really tricky side. Who the kind of teams that we've just mentioned, teams like I've just had a complete blank, but like Montenegro, like Lithuania, teams that will that can actually give big clubs a big teams a bloody nose. They've taken some pretty heavy scalps in their last couple of qualifying campaigns under Sanchez and Lawrence and Worthington, but they're not at the level, I think, where they can really consistently string together a qualifying. But they're definitely improving. They are in a tough group, and any team there would be an idiot. Will not want Northern Ireland. They'll all look at that and go, bloody hell. The Italians have got, that's a tough group for Italy. They've got to negotiate. Serbia are always going to be difficult, and Slovenia. And Northern Ireland, look, blimey, that is not an easy draw at all for them. No one's going to want to go to Windsor Park. I think that Northern Ireland have got an excellent chance of upsetting the apple cart, but I suspect that I'd be really surprised if they qualified. Really surprised if they qualified.
Mm. Yes, many a hurdle to clear on that one. Of course, Northern Ireland had Slovenia in their World Cup qualifying group, so they've got a bit of experience of playing them. So an interesting campaign coming up for them. Republic of Ireland, they're in Group B. They've got Russia, who of course choked it right at the last minute, of course, again in the playoffs for the World Cup. They've also got Slovakia, Macedonia, Armenia, and Andorra. So that's pretty much most of Eastern and Central Europe taken care of there in that group. And another tough one.
It sounds like the final board at the Eurovision Song Contest.
I was just going to say Slovakia.
It's an East European stitch up, I tell you.
it's Terry Wogan when you need him. Yes, indeed. So there we are. And elsewhere, Group A, I think.
That looks good, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean,
Germany and Turkey together.
Germany and Turkey together, and Austria.
And Austria,
I suppose we're contractually obliged to mention the group of birth because everybody else does at this sort of time. But I think out of all the groups, that if you're going to give any of them that name, it was probably going to be Group A. And it looked for a moment as if England might end up getting drawn in that group at one point, but luckily we were given that a major body swerve. So we got, as I say, Germany, Turkey, Austria, Belgium. I was surprised. I put a comment on Twitter when the draw was going on that Belgium were in the fourth pot of seeding, which I thought, why did they slip that far? I didn't think they deserved to be in the fourth group of teams, but maybe I'm wrong. I haven't really analysed these things. But
yes, they have.
Obviously they have, and their reward is that they get to play Germany.
Interesting group H, because Portugal and Denmark have been drawn together again, as they were again in the World Cup.
That's right. And they've also got Norway, who are usually the one team that managed to put the boot in with Scotland, or at least they have done on a few occasions recently. Cyprus and Iceland, so that's that. Group E is also going to be a real humdinger in some ways. Holland, Sweden, Finland together. Finland. Again, Finland, another one of those teams like Norway that may not do too well themselves, but can seriously stitch up the bigger one.
I think Sweden will buck their ideas up after their World Cup qualifying campaign. I think they'll have a much better time of it. I think Holland do well. I mean, like they've done well in qualifying campaigns recently. So I think they'll win that group.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Group E is an absolute gimme. Netherlands and Sweden to scamper off over the horizon with that one.
Yeah, I
share your disappointment, though, Terry, that we didn't quite see the best of Hungary in the World Cup qualifiers there last time around. But you know, hope springs eternal. We never know. But even so, it'll have to be bloody a lot of hope that springs eternal if they're going to get the runners up. Position at least in that.
No chance. Absolutely no chance.
So it's like a major revolution.
It'll be hats all round for eating if that happens.
Hungary are basically going to have to do what they did in the 1950s, and that's totally reinvent the game of football and surprise everybody. They're just going to, unless they have got some kind of tactical revolution with a whole new way, and they've got a whole army of Puskases waiting, in the wings that we don't know about, then I think it's fair to say that Holland and Sweden are probably going to do that. But yeah, I long for the day that we see the Magyars back in the World Cup. I have to say, I don't know why, I just do.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, just got that. I don't know. They used to be sort of always getting to the World Cups, and the, maybe for me, it's, I just sort of hanging on to that wonderful image of Trevor Brooking hitting that shot from about 25 yards out and it getting jammed in the stanchion in that qualifier of the World Cup in 82. Staunchion, sorry.
Staunchion, I think you'll find
use the right terminology. Staunchion, I do. I stand corrected. Group D, France's group, they managed to avoid Ireland, at least at the time being anyway. France have got Romania, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Belarus, Albania, Luxembourg should be pretty much a cake, because I don't think Romania, who are like the second strongest team in the group, really, I don't think they're much to worry about. Although Bosnia, of course, got in the playoffs.
I'm going to take issue with that. I don't think Romania are the second strongest team in the group. I think Bosnia are.
No, I do as well, yeah.
I think Bosnia have got the Mizimovic, Dzeko and Ibisevic, plus a few others. They've got a strong side, poor defence, but Romania have got nothing and no one. So I think that I've got no one.
And they haven't even got Mutu now, have they?
No, and they don't even know. That's right, indeed. So I think Bosnia's time has come. I think that they will qualify for Euro 2012, and they may even do so at the expense of the French. How's that for a prediction?
Steady.
Well, the French. Well, rash, I mean,
claims like that, you know.
We got to. There's a couple of things worth talking about. We didn't talk. We only glossed over Group A and Germany and stuff. But there's a big issue here with Germany. Germany's defence is really, really rickety, and there aren't that many examples of any better players. Vestermann is probably the only player who's coming through, who will probably be there, who will probably in the World Cup. But apart from that, it's not a great defence, and they're losing their manager after 2010. Mm. They got out really, really acrimoniously. And France, of course, well, France.
They won't
France,
even have dominance by the time 2012 comes around.
Both of these two powerhouses are going through some transitionary times, and it may well be that they'll have a poor start. And so I don't think it's. I don't think my soft prediction is quite so ludicrous as it sounds, although it is fairly ludicrous. I will.
Hand back the shovel, right? There was only one other group we didn't mention there, and that was Group F, which has got Croatia, Greece, Israel, Latvia, Georgia, Malta. Nothing specific to mention there. Unless you two have got anything in mind.
Well, I mean, I said in the blog that I thought that Croatia will pull themselves together after their sort of like, you know, Wiggins in the last qualifying campaign for the World Cup, and Greece are Greece. They should probably just amble their way there in their usual relaxed way, not conceding many goals and not scoring many. Group F probably won't be troubling the bloggers and podcasters outside of their native lands.
No, indeed. Fair point, well made, all that. So there we go. That's your draw, and the games will be sort of kicking off in September once the World Cup is out of the way. We shall be keeping an eye on that, and I'm sure we'll be reporting back on all of that when it begins later on in the year. You can be rest assured of that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, of course, last week we managed to devote quite a bit of time, in fact, all of our time on the podcast, to talking about England, and we mentioned that bloke. What's his name? Oh, John Terry. Yes, that's right. Yes.
Who?
How quickly we forget. We were in a privileged position, really, last week, that one-off for the fact we actually recorded on a Saturday and broadcast so early on the week, because I think we were one of the first podcasts, maybe even the first one, who knows, to even discuss the whole John Terry thing, really, in any depth. Any further fallout from that chapter? There's a couple of other points that were sort of made as the week progressed, regards in newspapers and podcasts and stuff like that. Most humorously, the point was made in one newspaper during the week that I read that said, it's ironic, isn't it, that in this whole shoddy affair, John Terry's having to seek counsel about extramarital affairs and morality from three Italians. So you've got sort of Ancelotti and Fabio Capello and Baldini, is it? Capello's right hand there.
Yes.
But apart from that, it does all seem to have died down now, and that you do get the impression that Capello's just tried to let some air out of this and move on. And if that's the case, he's done the trick, hasn't it? And we now find ourselves in a situation, well, Capello's mentioned now that when he took charge, he named not one, not two, but three captains for the England role. Of course, Ferdinand being the second, the vice-captain who's now come in to take over. And third was Stephen Gerrard, wasn't it? That's right. I think Stephen Gerrard is now vice-captain. Since this whole thing has gone on, it's all shifted up one place. And now, ironically, Frank Lampard's come in as third choice. I mean, I'm not sure we'll ever sort of get to see him even in, you know, in the World Cup or whatever as being vice-captain or even captain. But the point I'm kind of getting towards, though, is do either of you think that there's any chance that Capello might in the future give the captaincy back to John Terry, i.e. before the World Cup? Do you think this might be just like a sort of temporary slap on the wrist, and then when the World Cup comes back, he might say, okay, we can have the captaincy back? Is that likely, you think?
No. No, I don't think so at all. I think it would be far too... I think it would be asking for trouble from the press. I think Terry's got to... just got to put his head down and work hard for the team now. And just, you know, it's all a load of cliches and that, and obviously like what he's done off the field shouldn't really affect what he's doing on the field. But you know, everything is going to be it's going to be under a microscope for him. So, I mean, for him, he's going to be on the plane. So yeah. I think that's the only thing he has to worry about, really. So he's going to be starting. So yeah, that's it. Just get on with it.
And Ferdinand, because there is somebody mentioned, I can't remember who it was, somebody said there's a possibility if Rio Ferdinand's either injured or not in very good form, then he may not even be there as captain himself in the World Cup. We may end up with Gerrard. So that's we haven't got time to discuss that possibility.
So we've got an adulterer, we've got a drug taker, or we've got someone who has a problem with violence. Those are the three people.
Has a problem with violence.
We discussed very briefly England's centre back pairing, didn't we? And it's just worth pointing out for it, just in case Rio's lawyers are listening. He didn't take drugs. He just didn't turn up for his test.
That's right.
Yeah, important course, distinction to make there.
I wasn't talking about. I was just talking generally about.
You're talking. What? Just about the England team? Were you? They all take drugs. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, all of them.
All of them. Every single one of them. They're all on it. They're all at it. I tell you, all at it. we did talk about this very, very briefly last week, and it is an issue if Rio Ferdinand is not good enough or not fit, then he may not go. I echo Graham's sentiment. Terry, I think, will be grateful for the opportunity to just get his head down and get on with some work.
He certainly played well in the last couple of games for Chelsea anyway.
And it also takes a bit of the spotlight away from him. It means that he can then get on with repairing what's left of his life. And then hopefully the rest of us can stop paying attention to him.
Wise words, you don't mind their saying. I reckon that's pretty much all we've got time for in this whole podcast, but a few bits of any other business to take care of before we go. First of all, just wanted to say thanks to those of you who've been saying nice things about podcast on Twitter and so on. Rich and who else was it? Sorry, I'm forgetting.
Mike.
Yep. Yes, thank you very much. Thanks, amongst Mike. Others, I'm sure.
And Dan as well on the Facebook as well has been saying some nice things. Plus, you know, people on Twitter who I can't recall. But thank you all very much for doing that. And please, we do value your feedback. We do value it hugely because we like to know where we're going well and where we're not going well. So please do take a few moments, if you wish, just to leave a few words on the comments section or on Twitter or anything like that so that we can get some idea of how we're going. Thank you.
Yeah. And although we're not very good at it, if you've got any ideas of anything you want us to talk about, then let us know. And we will do our very best to accommodate your every whim. But as Terry said, thank you very much indeed for your feedback and your comments, and carry on doing so via Twitter and the Facebook fan page, Sound of Football, and also on the Sound of Football website as well. One final thing just to make you aware of, the third Socrates meeting for football bloggers, all of you out there, if you're anywhere near London, next Tuesday, which is the 16th, am I right? Tuesday the 16th of February?
Yep.
If you're in the London area, totally irrelevant reference if you don't mind my saying there, Graham, but thanks anyway. Just add a bit of colour to the whole thing. If you're in the London area or can get to London next Tuesday, do come along to the Socrates Football Bloggers Meetup. We'd love to see you. And the last two events have been a tremendous success. We've no reason to believe the next one won't be either. So if you want to come along, if you're interested, go along to the Socrates blog site. If you basically go into Google and type in Socrates bloggers meetup or words along those lines, I'm sure you'll find the website. Full details about the address and so on and so forth are all on there. We'd love to see you. So do try and come along if you can.
Free Baltic pies. We have free... Nan, the sponsor, has ordered a load of Balti pies for Socrates.
This is tremendous.
The food and it's the real development. It's worth pointing out that the food and the booze are supplied by our generous sponsor, Football Threes.
I know. I belatedly remind myself of that. Why didn't I say that at the beginning? Yes, as ever, Football Threes are our very kind sponsors, and thank you to everyone there for helping us out as ever with that, providing the roof over our head and all the refreshments and so on and so forth. Wonderful stuff. Well, that's about it. Thank you very much indeed for listening, and we have the pleasure of your company as ever next week for another Sound Football. But for now, for myself and Terry and Graham, we wish you a fond farewell.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
And now it's time for Soccer Jens.
Hello. My left hand is a bit like Emu. Except instead of pecking people, it orders clothes from Topshop and whistles online. No, Emu. No! Goodbye.
Tune in next week for another exciting episode of Soccer Jens.